Welcome into Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. My name is Joe George alongside Jeremy Branham. You can find us on all social media platforms at Joe George Radio. And today's episode is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. It's tequila at its natural, unfiltered best, made with 100% blue agave and totally additive free. You can find it near you at BlueStarTequila.com. Lots of stores and bars you can now find it in here in the Houston area. Jeremy, we've got a lot to talk about on this show. The final three games before the All-Star break, another injury, another All-Star. So some good, some bad, a great series over the weekend, and then the Guardians series happened. But we got to start with Jake Meyers because Jake Meyers is hurt. He is in the lineup. He's in center field. And then he leaves the game. And it's one of the more bizarre things we've seen in baseball, I feel like, honestly. Because it's not like the ball was hit to center field and he got hurt. He didn't even make it to the first pitch of the at-bat before he was out of the game and walking, you know, through the tunnel. So what do you don't know a lot right now as we record the show. So, like, what do you make of this situation?
Yeah, I mean, everything's a guess, right? Like, we're guessing what the injury could be. And, you know, you have people that fear the worst, and then you have, like, the optimistic people. So, like, I mean, it's just going to be your personal preference. My best guess, which is uneducated, I have zero experience in medicine. I've talked to doctors and stuff like that, and I've been around teams that have athletic trainers. So I do have a little bit of a background, like, on what they do. I don't have a background in terms of, like, diagnosing an injury. But you also see injuries, and you're like, okay, well, this stuff happened in the past, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you hear Jake Meyers talk, I think it was a good sign that he was talking after the game to the media. Like, I don't think that he would have done that if he had an Achilles tear. Well, they wouldn't know he had an Achilles tear. Yeah, you know right away if they have an Achilles tear. I don't know how to diagnose it, but I know that doctors who are familiar with it, they can just pinch the back of that leg and like, oh, yeah, your Achilles is fine. Your Achilles is not fine. I think if he had an Achilles tear, he's not talking to the media there. That's just my guess.
I don't think he's also walking off the field the way he does. Like, you think back to like Kobe. Like
Kobe shot free throws. Kobe was walking around.
But he was struggling to walk to where he was going.
Jake Meyers was struggling to walk.
But Jake walked a long way. Honestly, it's so much worse if he has a torn Achilles.
But he was on his trainer. Like he was. Yeah. He didn't put any weight on his right leg.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, him after the game, you know, politely, I'll give him credit for asking the media person, whoever it was there, if he had to answer the question about if his injury felt worse. Yeah. And then declining to answer and ending the interview. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think it's positive you talk to the media, but it obviously is a sign to me. It feels like, again, a guess for sure, that it feels much worse in that moment, whatever happened, than before. Yeah. Or he just would have answered the question.
I think it feels worse now than it did then. My uneducated guess, based on the information and the hints provided, his calf injury, missing a couple of games, talking to the media, what happened within our view. And then Meyers did get into some of what he was doing before the game. You know, he was going through a little bit of a test to see if he could handle it, was sprinting, was doing agility exercises. My uneducated guess on what happened is that he has a more serious calf strain than he wanted to let on, that the team recognized, and they put way too much, you know, value in what the player is telling them, which is silly to do. Like, you're the medical expert, not the player. They don't let first graders pick their teachers. You don't let a player say when he's going to play again. You got to look out for what's in the best interest of the team and the player, of course. So knowing that he did all the exercises and all the agility test and all of this, he was doing this hours before the game. Okay. Like, he has a sore calf, right? He's got a messed up calf. It's some sort of calf strain, calf pull, calf injury. So whenever you test it, like, it's going to feel sore. It's going to lock up on you later. My guess is that he went through the whole thing, went to the clubhouse for a little bit, probably got cold, probably deactivated it. And then when he ran out there, he's like, ooh, this is tight. Which, I mean, you're coming back from an injury. You exercise the injury and the muscle that is injured. It's going to feel tight on you. My guess is it's a calf strain that's going to cost him to miss several weeks. We'll see. Hopefully that's the case. That feels like good news to me. But I don't think he's talking to the media with a torn Achilles. I think the calf strain was probably a bigger deal than they were letting on, whether it was Meyers, whether it was the Astros. So, I mean, that's the hope. That's my guess. And then also the way that he ran out. Like, did you notice that the Guardians TV covered it way more than the Shin did? Like, the Shin just didn't show replays of it. They didn't show him running out to the outfield. They didn't show him on the cart. Guardians TV did a good job of like, okay, this is what's happening. It showed Jake Meyers jogging to his position. So, like, I've never seen a guy tear his Achilles jogging. You know, it's usually like a cut. It's usually like I'm going to like land on it funny, or like it's usually not a jog. So that gives me some hope there too. But yeah, it's weird. And then also, like, if you want to go to the extra level too of the Astros medical staff, like, why is Jake Meyers playing a few days after injuring a calf before an off day, before the All-Star break, whenever you have a 6.5 game lead in the division? I brought this up on Twitter after it happened. Like, oh, you know, hindsight 20. No, this wasn't hindsight 2020. I said it on the show before they played the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's obvious. Like, I am an err on the side of caution kind of guy. I think you have to protect the player that way. If it means that you miss four games, like when you could have had a player because they're on the IL. Oh, well, like, I'll take that trade off than missing than like having a guy come back too fast re-aggravates it, and then he's gone for 3 or 4 weeks. So, yeah, I thought it was a very, very bad decision from an Astros medical staff that has zero benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I think, and you look at, you know, I think Chandler Rome, his latest piece in The Athletic, kind of did a good job outlining the past from this season back to when James Click was fired, of reminding us of certain moments about the medical staff and things that have happened. The first one, we'll start with this core group of people, and we'll start with Dana Brown. Dana Brown said in June, I forgot that he had said this, he said, quote, "You can only go by what the players tell you." And that makes me think of Dusty Baker, who, like you have brought up multiple times, would always give, when they say they're 100%, give them that extra day. And you think back to Yordan Alvarez, Lance McCullers, Jake Meyers, these guys who are rehabbing and starting things, Luis Garcia and all of his setbacks. These are all guys who are competitive in nature, want to be part of one of the best teams in baseball, know they've got a chance to win the World Series this year, and they want to be out there and play. And maybe for against their own good, they're trying to play and they're hurting themselves in a way that's a problem. So not to blame the players here, because players want to play. It's the job of the medical staff to stop that from happening. It's the job of the medical staff to properly evaluate them and try to figure out if they're aligned. I know it's hard, but like we think about this with the NFL and concussions. Players lie about concussions all the time, but they have protocols now, and it feels like the Astros don't have protocols. And then that makes me think back to what everyone's been talking about, really, it feels like the last 48 hours on social media and in Chandler's articles, and I'm sure you guys will discuss this and have discussed this on your show, is that James Click, after Jake Meyers was hurt in August of 2022, said they were going to evaluate the return to play process because Jake Meyers was not ready to be throwing in the way that he needed to be with his shoulder at the time, the injury that goes back to the White Sox game.
Yeah.
He said that, but then he got fired, right? Like, he was no longer part of the organization. And did Dana Brown know that when he came in? Did Joe Espada think that it was the same problem? That feels like that issue has been an issue for 3 years now, and the Astros haven't reevaluated their return to play process correctly. And that, to me, feels like where this is a little bit on the players, but at the end of the day, it's on the medical staff for sure.
I think I mostly agree with that. Like, I think that they have a plan. I think the plan is severely flawed. I think every training staff probably has, like, this is how we're gonna conduct business and do things. Maybe I'm being naive there, but every team that I've been on, they have, like, this is what we do, blah 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 blah, and have protocol. Now, can the protocol be severely flawed? Yeah, absolutely it can. I think we're seeing that. I think the Danish put things in place since the Yordan injury. Now, you can question, was that too late? And the answer would be yes. Why weren't you doing this after the Tucker injury? But Dana's openly said, like, yeah, well, you know, we're going to image more. And we've seen that. We saw it. Well, I mean, we saw it with DeCinzo. We saw it with DeCinzo in his hand. Pena had imaging, and then he had more imaging and found a broken rib, which was after he was messing around with a weighted medicine ball and taking hacks in the cage, which that's kind of problematic as well. Yeah, they just have – I think it's a severely flawed plan. I think it's incompetent. I think that – I think they're erring on the side of aggression. I listened to Sean Salisbury interview Dana Brown on Wednesday, went back and listened to that. And he talked, like, you know, Sean asked him about Salisbury, or he asked him about Yordan. And he's like, you know, what's the latest on Yordan? He's like, well, when he tells us that he feels good, we're going to get him back out there and try to expedite this. What? Why are you trying to expedite this? That sounds like the worst thing possible. Expediting Yordan seems to be the reason that he's still out. Like, mm-hmm. It seems like you would want to slowly ease him back into things, not expedite things. And maybe I'm nitpicky on the word, but that's not how I'd be handling Yordan's chronically bad hands that had a broken bone. And I wouldn't be expediting it. I would be babying him back into it. So I think that their plan is like, let's get him on the field. They need to be out there. And I think that's very bad logic.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, I think the lead in the division should play a factor. Like, you're up 6.5 games, you know, before the Guardian stretch, you've taken down the three top teams as we sit here in the National League. You pushed the Phillies back in their division by sweeping them. You took 2 out of 3 against the Cubs, and you swept the Dodgers. You crushed the Dodgers basically for 3 games. And yes, you got swept by the Guardians, and that feels much more negative. And we'll talk about if that's what's the concern of having all these guys be hurt. But like, you just played some phenomenal baseball with a Rocky series mixed in there as well. So you're playing good baseball without these guys. Your pitching's been really good for the most part. Like, you've weathered this storm so well, and you've got a 6.5 game lead in the division. What's the rush? Like, what matters the most is October. Is Yordan and Jake Meyers, are they going to be in the lineup in October? That's what matters the most for this team. Does it alter your trade deadline plans? We talked about that last week. Maybe, if you know how severe it is, but I don't know why it feels like they're rushing. You're right. Like, they have a protocol, but whatever the protocol is, it's not good. And
yeah,
I still don't understand. Like, I know we don't hear like the firing often of trainers and that stuff, but we know who Jeremiah Randall is. Like, we know who he is. And I don't really care if he speaks to the media, because he's just going to lie, honestly. Like, he's going to throw the HIPAA stuff out there, of what he can and cannot say. But I just don't understand how there hasn't been a change. I mean, you think about any other position in the organization, whether it's the manager or a player or anything, scouts that have failed as badly as this medical staff has failed, you would think that the man at the top of the organization would be tired of seeing his money on the injured list.
I'm with you.
Like I just don't get it. I don't get it. Like, I don't get why Jim Crane is allowing this.
It's not even the money on the injured list, because I think Crane realizes there's going to be injury in sports. Like, it's going to happen. Somebody's going to tear an ACL. Somebody's going to have a Tommy John. Like, I mean, look at it's chronically wrong. It's chronically a problem in baseball where pitchers are having Tommy John. Let me look at the Verlander contract. Like, pay him $60 million, pitch one game on a $60 million 2-year deal. So I don't even think it's the money on the injured list. I think it's more about the embarrassment to the franchise. Like, look how everybody's talking about the Astros when it comes to injuries, whether it's locally, whether it's nationally. It's like, oh my goodness, what are the Astros doing down there? What is going? How are you allowing Kyle Tucker with a broken bone in the back of his leg? How are you allowing him to run on a treadmill? That's incompetence. That's malpractice. How are you allowing JP France to come back too soon, which cost him a lot more time? Why is it taking 24 months to get Luis Garcia back on the mound? 2.5 years for Luis McCullers, and he has a bone spur the size of my fist, and they didn't even know about it. All of these pitchers who have been shut down for a long time, none of them hit their target dates except for Justin Verlander, who trained and got, you know, rehabbed outside of the organization. How are you allowing your best offensive player and Yordan Alvarez to swing a baseball bat with a broken bone in his hand? Think about how bad that sounds. Mm-hmm. Kyle Tucker's running on a treadmill with a broken bone in his leg because you can't find it. Yordan Alvarez is swinging a baseball bat with a broken bone in his hand because you can't find it. Jeremy Peña, on a smaller scale, is doing workouts with a weighted medicine ball and taking hacks in a cage with a fracture in his rib that you can't find. Jake Meyers is coming back off a calf strain In best case scenario, it seized up on him and it flared up because he was probably out there way too early. So it's not even the money. It's more the embarrassment. And if you go back to like the sign stealing stuff, why did Crane fire Luno and Hinch? Because he talked about the embarrassment that it had on the organization. And those things are very, very different, like the sign stealing scandal and, you know, the injury. But where they're the same is that it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I don't think the sign stealing stuff's that embarrassing with what we know now, but he was embarrassed about it at the time. He's like, I'm never going to be surprised again. How can you look at all of these medical things that have happened, laying all of them out, and not be embarrassed?
It's a great question. Like, I don't know if there's some part of this, Jeremy, that's like, well, it hasn't bit us in the ass yet. Like, it hasn't. Like the Verlander one was, he missed two seasons because it was a 60-game season. But remember, again, like, think back to that even. Like, it was reported he had Tommy John, and they villainized Chandler Rome for being right.
That's not entirely accurate. Chandler reported that he's going to need Tommy John, not that he had Tommy John.
Oh, yes, sorry, yes.
And the Astros were like, well, we're not there yet. And, I mean, they eventually got there. And Chandler, yeah. I believe Chandler in that case. But it wasn't that he had it. It was that he was going to need it.
But like I don't know. I mean, it hasn't bit them because they've obviously won a World Series with all these, like, in this kind of injury era, because this obviously wasn't really a thing in 2017. But like, so it hasn't bit them big in the playoffs. But like, if Yordan Alvarez were to miss this season, and Jake Meyers were to miss the rest of the season, just worst case scenario here for a second, you go out there and you lose, you know, 4-3, 3-1 in a 5-game series, and it's because your lineup can't produce because, you know, Taylor Trammell or whoever's in center field that night, Reese Dubon, makes a critical error instead of Jake Meyers being out there. Like, maybe that's what, in a weird way, Jim Crane needs to, like, open his eyes to this mess that's happening. But it just seems to be like they're just flying by the seat of their pants and like just trying to figure it out on the fly, and whatever they do is wrong. Like, unfortunately, they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt. That's anymore. Like, no more.
Like, if they had like a great reputation, like I can actually see the, you know, like their point of view on the Jake Meyers thing. Like, oh, he's like, we don't think it's a big deal. Like, it's precautionary. You know, it's not, we're looking at the ultrasound. We're not seeing anything of significance. Like, yeah, this is a calf that could be played on. And then he goes out and does all these agilities and all these sprints, and he looks great doing it. And after he's done, he says he's fine. It's like, okay, yeah, you can go. Like, I can see that perspective. But I can't see the perspective whenever you add all this other stuff on top of that. So you haven't earned the benefit of the doubt. You've actually lost the benefit of the doubt with all of these other things. So that's what's frustrating about it. And I would, like, if it takes Crane losing a playoff series to open his eyes on this, like, he's not that dumb. Like, Jim Crane's a smart man. I don't know why he hasn't made changes. Like, I don't even know who's to blame, right? Like, we see titles, like we see head athletic trainer, we see doctor, we see team physician. Like, okay, but I don't know their roles day to day. Like, I don't know who the ultimate fall guy is here. Mm-hmm. Would I expect someone to fall? Yeah. I just don't know who to point fingers at. I would say change needs to be made. Like, that's very obvious. I think it's embarrassing the change hasn't been made yet. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre to me. It's really bizarre. Because you would think that there would be change to this. And I think that their philosophy is, hey, we have players here and our job is to get them on the field. I think that's their philosophy. And what they're losing sight of there is that at times when you do that, you're going to end up costing these players more time because they're not ready. And that's the fear I have. Like, the Astros continuously get in the way of themselves with these injuries, and it's happened over and over and over again. And the thing that, like, if you're looking for one reason why, I think it's because they're trying to rush them on the field again.
All right, we'll take a quick break here. We'll hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila when we get back. We'll talk about what is the reality of the Astros with all these injuries, is the Guardians series a sign of things to come, or is it a nothing burger? Plus, we'll talk about Isak Paredes joining the group of Astros that are all-stars, and Hunter Brown ditching the game as well. So let's right now, let's hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila so they can teach you what night harvesting is all about.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our jimadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening's cool air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
All right, Jeremy, we just talked about all the injuries, the weird stuff that's been happening. But again, two series back-to-back, Dodgers, Guardians, very different. One team dealing with a ton of injuries that goes out there and crushes the Dodgers. One team that comes up, gets swept by the Guardians, a team that have lost like 10 straight games coming into it. Largely, you know, there's big moments that go wrong for the Astros, little moments that go wrong. But this is where it felt like, it's funny because like the Dodgers series, like there's such a high of like, you know, all those runs and a big series sweep and like the Astros are the Dodgers daddy, all that stuff. And then the Guardians series is the exact opposite. And you're just like, this is not good. Like you're missing Yordan, you're missing Jake, you're missing your guys. Who is this team? Is it like, are the Astros more like without these guys, let's say on the conservative side, coming out of the All-Star break for 2 weeks, conservatively, you're without Jake Meyers and Yordan Alvarez, and hopefully Jeremy Pena returns. Uh-huh. Are you closer to the Guardians series, or are they closer to the Dodgers series, or who the Astros you think they'll actually be coming out of the break?
We're probably overrating how good the Dodgers are at this present time. Like they got swept by Milwaukee. Their pitching is abysmal.
Right.
We're probably underrating Cleveland whenever they came into town. Like that's a good team. Like they're, you know, they have some holes offensively. Jose Ramirez is one of the best offensive players in baseball.
Monster.
And they pitch. Like they pitch. Like so it's easy to look at the Dodgers and be like, "Oh, it's this juggernaut." When actually this time of year they're not playing great baseball. And then it's easy to look at the Guardians coming in on a double-digit losing streak and be like, this team's awful. They're the Rockies. But in reality, they aren't. You know, coaches always have that line, like it's never as good as it seems it is. It's never as bad as it seems it is. That's probably what's going on here. My feeling on the Astros didn't change based on the Dodger series, and my feeling on the Astros doesn't change based on the Guardian series. I think the Astros are a World Series contender. I thought that before they played the Dodgers. I still think that after they played Cleveland. My opinion on that has not changed. There's a lot of people that allow their opinions of a team to change based on the ebbs and flows of a 162-game season. I think there's a lot of things that came into play that kind of – you know, all the stars aligned in the Cleveland series. You come off a great road trip. You're feeling good after the Dodgers series. You're a week ahead of the All-Star game. You're also playing all these 4A players that you have no choice but to play. So, no, I'm not concerned. I think the Astros still comfortably win this division, and I still very much think they're a World Series contender.
For sure. I wouldn't say, like, there's no concern, but I do think the what happened versus the Phillies, the Cubs, and the Dodgers, I do think is a little bit of an unrealistic expectation for the Astros with all these injuries. Like, not that they're not going to – I don't think they're going to lose this division, or I don't think Seattle's even going to get, you know, that close. I mean, they're being carried by the guy who should be, as of this moment, the AL MVP in Cal Raleigh. Has like 37 homers for the break.
Disagree.
What? You think it's – what, the pitching? I mean, the pitching's been pretty good, but –
no, I disagree with you thinking that Cal Raleigh should be the MVP.
Oh, really? Why? Real quick.
Because Judge is way better.
Oh, it's not that much of a difference.
I disagree.
I think the war is only like a point and a half, which is a large difference.
That's a big difference.
It's Judge and then it's everyone else. Like, there's a huge chunk in war right now between Judge and everyone. But the way Cal Raleigh's playing right now, like, I don't know. It's just, it's hard to not think someone who's got 37 home runs, for me, is not the top of the MVP charts.
Is Isak Paredes, having a good year?
Yeah.
You think he's been good and solid?
Yeah, he's an all-star now.
What about Yiner? You think Yiner's had a
not really
good year? You know the difference between Isak and Yiner in war?
One and a half.
One and a half. So, like, that's that you're saying it's not a very big difference, but it's the difference between Isak Paredes and Yiner Diaz. And, like, these numbers that Judge has right now are insane. I know Raleigh's doing it from a mostly catcher position, and, like, I don't think that should be ignored. I think that that is pretty significant. Judge has an OPS plus of 231.
I know
Raleigh's at 191, which is, I mean, obviously very, very good. How often do you see guys north of 200? And he's at 231. The dude's hitting 360. His OPS is 1,200.
I know.
Like, the dude, he's insane. Yeah, Aaron Judge.
He's insane. It's
Aaron Judge would have my vote, and I wouldn't bat an eye.
No, I think it's fair. I like Cal Raleigh, the story. I'm a bad voter if I had a vote. I'm a story guy. I like the story.
You're voting on the MVP based on a story?
That's what everyone does.
You are the living example of why humans voting on things is dumb.
I know, but look at the NBA. That's what they do at the NBA all the time, like, and in baseball. Like,
you're right.
But yeah, I just, you know, like, back to the Astros. I think they're close. I think they'll be like, if you look at when they get to the All-Star break, while these guys are out, however long it is. My guess is, like, you're going to see a lot more when you look at, like, the ESPN standings. You see the last 10 games. You're going to see a lot more like 6-4. Which, like, it's still going to be plenty to win, to take care of the Mariners and advance and win the division until these guys get back. I just don't think you're going to see, like, the big highs and the big lows. I think it's going to be a lot more of an up and down roller coaster every day of what you see from the lineup until the players can return. I just think realistically, because what they've gotten from these guys, I mean, like, how many people, like, you might have known them, but, like, I think if you asked 80% of our lineup, no one knew who Zach Short was. Hand up, I'm in that group. I didn't know who this guy was. It's awesome. That's why I love baseball. But, like, he's out there. He's making contributions in big moments or good moments for the Astros. So they're finding a way, and it shows you how great of an organization they are. I just think after the All-Star break, like, it's just going to be, like, right above 500 for a little bit until you can get everyone back and this team can really get going.
I think that's realistic, and I think it's fair. Like, hey, you don't have a few of your best players. Just tread water. Like, just be above a little bit above 500. And because you've built this lead in the division, you can allow yourself to do that. No one's asking the Astros to play their best baseball post All-Star break in July and August. Like, you want to get healthy and then start playing your best baseball in September. And because you finished June and had a great June, best June in all of baseball, it allowed you the opportunity to do that. That's what honestly makes the injuries frustrating. It's like, how do you not have the awareness that you have this comfortable lead and you don't need to rush people back? But I agree with that logic. Their pitching is good, even though that, you know, they've had injuries there. They're expecting guys back at some point. Like, Luis Garcia started at a rehab.
He did last year too.
He did. He did, and he got shelled, and people mocked me whenever I'm like, yeah, this doesn't look good. Oh, you shouldn't put any stock into a rehab assignments, which for the most part is true, but hey, maybe look okay. Like, I don't need you to produce stats, but, like, look like a big leaguer. You know what I mean? Like, Chaz McCormick right now is 0 for 12 with 8 strikeouts and 3 rehab games. And I posted that and be like, oh, you're a casual. Rehab assignments mean nothing. I mean, I think that they probably mean he shouldn't be striking out against AAA pitching. Double-A pitching.
If he was like 0 for 12 with 1 strikeout, you'd be like, he's putting the bat in the ball and he's just getting outs. But, like, it's eight strikeouts.
I don't care if he gets hits. Like, if he's 0 for 12 with 12 rockets, call him up. Put him in the lineup on Friday. I don't care that he's 0 for 12. I care that he struck out 8 of the 12 opportunities against minor league pitching.
That's a lot.
And people are like, oh, he's just tracking pitches. No, he's swinging and missing, dude. Like, no, that's not what's going on there. He's not just tracking. He's trying to prove that he is worth of a big league spot and quickly getting back. But whatever.
And frankly, you need him now. Like,
yeah, I mean, if I don't Jake need Myers over 12 is out, strikeouts.
No, you don't. But like, you need Chaz to be better than obviously what he's doing to the minors. Yeah, but like,
just his norm, right?
Yeah, like be the
Chaz
norm.
Was his norm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll be better than the guys that are currently on the bench. Even like, I like Dubon, but like, if Chaz can be his norm, that's a still
he'd be
a
playing
plus.
Every day.
Yeah,
he'd be playing
a plus
every day
in center field.
He'd be playing over Hummel. He'd be playing over Trammell.
Yeah,
he'd be playing over Dubon most days in the outfield. Like, Chaz could help you right now if he's his norm.
Yeah,
but frustrating about him being hurt too.
Coming out of the All-Star break, like, I would expect to see Chaz in the lineup every day until Jake's out. Like,
I mean, he should, but he can't be striking out 75% of the time against minor league pitching.
No, that's true. That's true. That won't work in the big leagues, Jeremy.
67%, right?
Well, Isak Paredes named an All-Star. I think it just adds to the bad stuff that we've talked about with like the organization with the injuries. Like, it just it continues to show what a great move they made with Kyle Tucker. I mean, Cam Smith, it's a joke at this point. Like, it almost makes me laugh when I see his numbers and what he's doing and batting fourth in the lineup. And it just, it's honestly, it's fascinating what they're doing. And I'm going to put you up. I have a lineup question, a fully healthy lineup question for you. because you're the lineup guy. So I'm going to put you on the spot here in a little bit, but also give you a little bit of time to think about it. But what they're getting out of Cam Smith, Isak Paredes being an All-Star, it's awesome to see. It's been a great acquisition for them, what he's done at third base defensively, and he loves the Crawford boxes. It just adds to the quality of trade that Dana Brown made, and that adds to the Astros. And then Hunter Brown said, no, I'm not pitching in the All-Star game, which good. That's fine with me.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that with Hunter Brown. Like, I don't care about exhibition games. I'm also notoriously don't care about individual accolade. Does that make me a jerk? Yeah, I'm a jerk. I wear that. But I care about team production. Like, I care what's in the best interest of the Astros. And do I cross the line into jerkhood at times because I care about the Astros more than I care about the player? Yeah, probably. But I don't know these people personally, so I don't really care. Is it better for Hunter Brown to pitch the final day before the All-Star break and then to be better lined up post All-Star break than to pitch in the All-Star game, which means more for an Astro, for the Astros? The Hunter Brown pitching the last day before the break. Yep. Isak's fun. Like, I like Isak. Isak's he's got so much drip. Have you noticed that?
Yeah,
like,
he does.
He's just cool. Like, he's a cool guy. He wears his pants all the way under his cleats. Looks like a onesie. I think it has something to do with that hamstring strain. I'm kidding. But no, that's a good story. You know, it's a good story. I love how Espada does his little clubhouse speeches that they then put on the internet too. It's like, yeah, look at this. Here we go.
Well,
here we go, Isak.
But they don't feel as awkward as Cam Smith can call.
No, it didn't. I don't know how
the All-Star feels very like normal behavior.
Yeah.
The Cam Smith one still is like the most cringe thing I've seen on the internet this year.
Call me a throwback, but I don't like putting that stuff on the internet.
Like, I think it's everyone does it now. I agree with you, but like everyone does it now. Like they all put, you know, call-ups and All-Stars. Like it all ends up on the internet. So I think it's just become a norm. And it's almost one of those where at this point, like if the Astros didn't do it, it might be a little more strange, honestly.
Maybe so. It's like, more of a general take than an Astro take.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, nitpicking the Astros here. I know that the Astros are like what led to the conversation. It's more of a general take. Like,
I agree with you, though.
I mean, call me throwback. Like what is in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse to me. I think that those are intimate moments that belong within the guys in that room. I don't really love that stuff being out there.
Unless
and
you're
also
late.
It's
like
a little
Josh Hader was, I think.
Yeah, what was he doing? Why didn't he
Where was – like, Joe Espada is, like, clearly looking for him, and he's like, oh, there you are.
And then also, like, I mean, there's obviously some video editing there. Like, it cut out, and then, like, oh, Hader is coming. Let's pick it up here. But then he's also not in uniform when everybody else was in uniform. Like,
that was strange. I think like, I would have, like, I almost, like, redone it.
He probably got fined. He probably got fined in kangaroo court for being late. He was on a turkey hunt, I think. No, I'm just a believer in that stuff staying in the clubhouse. And it's also like, hey, look at me. And look, again, I'm talking about all of baseball, not talking about the Astros. Like, look at this great moment that we're doing. Like, watch me. And I don't, you know, I'm never a huge fan of that.
Okay. I want to be, let's be positive here. Okay. The Astros lineup is fully healthy.
Mm-hmm.
What's your lineup now? The way Cam Smith has played, the way that Paredes has played, Pena. Yeah. So Pena's your leadoff guy, right?
Yeah, I'm leading off Pena at short. I'm sticking with my top three. Pena's my shortstop. Isak's my third baseman batting second. I keep Altuve. Altuve's been thriving in the three hole. I've always loved Altuve in the three spot. I think it's the perfect spot for him. He doesn't see a lot of pitches. He doesn't walk a lot, but he has enough, like, you know, he hits for average. He hits for pop. I think the three spot's perfect for him. He won the MVP. The year he won the MVP, he was batting third most of that year. So he's my three-hole hitter. He's really taken to that like a fish to water. Jordan's my DH, cleanup man. I'll have Cam Smith batting fifth and right. I will have Walker, Seawalk, batting sixth at first. I'll have Yiner catching in the seventh spot. What does that leave me? Leaves me my Altuve's in left.
Your center fielder.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So Myers is bats eighth, and then in center, and then Dubon.
Your second baseman. Second baseman
bats ninth. We're assuming no trade, right? I mean, we're assuming no trade. Everybody healthy. That's my nine there.
Yeah, I was just curious, like if where, because like I don't think you move Paredes down and like put Altuve back up at two, but like I mean it's the fact again. It's more about just Cam Smith again, like the fact that you're projecting a healthy lineup in his rookie year. There's no question he should be the guy behind Jordan Alvarez. Not a doubt in the world. He should be the guy batting fifth behind the best hitter on the team.
It's incredible. Compliment to Cam. It's a compliment to the season he's having. It's testament to that, but it's also a testament to Walker and Yiner, like not being able to hold them off, you know? Yeah, like that's true. They were the leaders. Like you gave them the head start to be there, and they've, you know, haven't been good. I think it's fair to say Yiner's been better, and Seawalk had the great trip, you know, before he had a baby. Him and Mrs. Seawalk had a little Seawalk.
I've decided I'm changing my stance on the trade real quickly here.
Cam trade?
Yeah, for you. I know I'm wearing an Astros hat right now, but everyone listening knows where I'm from. It's going to go down as the worst trades in Major League Baseball history.
You have these unbelievable takes. It's going to be worse than the Red Sox selling Babe Ruth to the Yankees.
I think it's going to be up there with Tatis.
I don't know what did they give up for Tatis?
James Shields from
Big Game James
went to the White Sox for Fernando Tatis Jr.
Straight up.
I think there was some other stuff involved too.
Did James Shields do anything? Did he do anything with the White Sox?
Not really.
I mean, I don't know how you can say.
I mean, Tucker's like
the Ruth trade has to be the worst.
But like, it's. I mean, like you have like modern trades. Like, I mean, Jordan. It's not like I don't know if it's going to reach Jordan level.
Yeah, yeah. I even forgot about that one. I mean, Larry like, Anderson for Bagwell.
Yeah, I'm so impressed with Cam Smith and what he's done. It really just looks like one organization had zero clue what they had in their farm system. And Dana Brown, who was not in his scouting department, who was not in any position to draft Cam Smith, they knew exactly what they had in Cam Smith, getting that player. It just feels like a huge swing and miss from one. And unless they re-sign Kyle Tucker, which I don't think they will, Cam Smith looks like a legit star player for the Astros for the foreseeable future. Like you talk about the window never closing with Jim Crane. Cam Smith to me feels like the player that rips that window like off the wall and keeps it open forever or for a very long time. Like he just looks like a player that could be a total game changer. And like we've seen Julio Rodriguez have this incredible rookie year and really be a nothing burger for the most part since. I mean, he's good defensively, but his offensive numbers have been nowhere near what it was his rookie year for the Mariners. And he's honestly, I feel like turning into one of the more overrated players in baseball at this point for me. So I guess there is that chance for Cam Smith that, like, you don't like that take, do you?
I think it's hot.
I'm not – I just, like, the numbers aren't good for Julio. Like, I think he's overrated now. But I think Cam Smith can just be, like, a – yeah, debatable.
Rod's an all-star. He also, I mean, it's a team-friendly contract. Like, his luxury tax hit is $17.5 million.
That's a large contract. Is
that much for Julio?
That's a huge deal.
I mean, I think he's overrated offensively. I wonder how much of it's the ballpark, too. Like, I'd be interested in his splits. I'm actually pulling that up now.
Cal Raleigh doesn't care.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point. But, I mean, but, yeah, that's – Yeah, no, it is interesting how people have struggled there, and Cal Raleigh's having like the best offensive catcher year ever.
Yeah, no, I just the farther.
Oh, dang! You want J-Rod splits this year?
Yes.
J-Rod's OPS away this year is 793. Okay. At home, it's 594. That's 200-point gap. Like, there's something wrong with that ballpark, I'm convinced. But you're right.
That's, weird that Cal Raleigh. I mean, that's the exact opposite of Colorado.
I'm gonna pull up his split. I'm gonna pull up his career splits. His career splits at home: 741 OPS, 820 away, 289 average drastic. Away, 253. Yeah, I know. Like, that's like kind of the hope for Taylor Trammell. Is that you look at Taylor Trammell's numbers at T-Mobile, like they're awful. You look at his numbers away from T-Mobile, and they're like, okay, he could be a bench outfielder.
Yeah. You know,
like it's that ballpark, man. That's where hitters go to die, except for Cal Raleigh.
I just look real quick. That's a guy who wasn't great last year, like offensively. He was good. Now he's a platinum glove winner, but like Cal Raleigh's not putting up these numbers every year, obviously. Like he's having a year of the year of his career. Like this will be the best year he has ever, and it won't even be close. Yeah.
No, I think you're right about J-Rod being a disappointment offensively. I think that's fair.
Yeah. My point is, like, I don't think Cam Smith is going to do that. Like, it feels like the adjustments we've seen this year, every time he goes into a slump, he makes little adjustments, and, like, the change is so big. And I'm so high on him, the player. Like, from the other side of the aisle, I hate the trade.
What if Tucker finishes top three in MVP and the Cubs win the World Series?
That's different, but that's not happening. Like it's you have to go to the World Series, I think, for it to be okay. Like I think that's what, like Yankees fans, they feel okay about what they gave up for Juan Soto because they went to the World Series. They didn't win it, but they got back to the World Series for the first time in a very long time. Yeah. I think the Cubs fans would feel the same. I would feel the same way. Like they go to the World Series. All right, Cam, like that's you'll probably win one or two with the Astros. Unless the Astros beat the Cubs in the World Series, that would be a different conversation. But I'm so impressed with Cam Smith, the player, that I'm like, it makes me hate the trade for the other side more and more and more. And it makes me love it even more for the Astros. He just feels like a genuine superstar player right now.
What if the Cubs lose in the NLCS, but they lock up Tucker?
Then I'm good with the trade.
Okay. See, I think the Cubs didn't view Cam Smith as an outfielder. I think that's where the miss here is. And they felt that he was blocked at third base. So they're like, okay, he's expendable because he doesn't have a position to play in the bigs, where it's like, oh, he could have just been your right fielder. And you don't have to make, you know, this trade in East. Like, I mean, Isak was not great in Chicago for whatever reason too, though. And like Wesneski was kind of whatever.
Well, it's very Mariners there.
I don't hate it from the Cubs point of view. I love it from the Astros point of view though. And it really justifies a philosophy I've had because I believe in trading players before they walk. And I don't believe in long-term contracts. I think they're bad. If you look at these long-term contracts, you look at the return on investment on these long-term contracts, they almost never work. So why do we always say lock them up whenever they almost never work? Like it's so weird to me. Like you have a thing, we have evidence that 90% of the time, maybe even greater than 90% of the time, these long-term contracts do not work. But still, we bang the table wanting to lock up these players.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why do we do that? I guess because we fall in love with the player.
We'll see how different it looks. I know Rob Manfred's the salary cap.
But that changes the game. That changes the game. But it goes back to the point, like what I was saying. Like I would have traded Correa before his walk year. I would have traded Springer before his walk year. I would have traded Bregman before his walk year. And people, whenever I'd had that, were like, "You're an idiot. You don't know anything. You dummy. You're so stupid." And then they finally do it. They finally do it one time, and everybody loves it.
Oh, so honestly, it's like,
well, should have done these all these other times too. And you can have five Cam Smiths running around.
The last thing here is the social media reaction to Cam Smith has kind of – it has done that already. People – I've seen tweets that are like, can't wait to see what we get for Jeremy Pena and Hunter Brown. Like, they're like, they're already ready to trade these guys now. They're like, hopefully win a World Series with both of them. But, like, if Scott Boras isn't going to find a way and the players aren't going to come to a team-friendly deal with the Astros, then, like – do what you just did. Like, it took one good move. Now, they're not all going to work out this way.
No, they won't.
But, like, if one of the two hits, like you get another Cam Smith out of, if you trade Pena and Hunter Brown down the road, like maybe a pitcher, like that'd be great. So
we sensationalize the fear. Like, oh, what is Carlos Correa going to, what is it going to mean when Correa leaves and they don't have his leadership? How are the Astros going to survive? Oh, Jeremy Pena is going to win a World Series MVP and the Astros win the World Series literally the very next year. How are the Astros going to survive without King Tuck? Oh, and Cam Bregman. Smith's going to come have a really good rookie season. How are they going to survive without Bregman? Isak Paredes is going to be an American League All-Star. And it's also like, oh, what's it going to mean for attendance? Like, fans aren't going to show up to the game. And then, like, a month later, it's like, okay, let's go watch the Astros. Like, you just have to wear it for a month of bad PR. And then it's like, okay, people start seeing why you did it. And it's like, oh, we really like Cam now. And you see the other day, they had crowns in right field for King Cam. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I don't love the crowns for Cam though.
That's got to go. That's lame. That shouldn't be there. I mean, look, we saw the numbers like on our end, like from like a business perspective at the start of the season from the Astros, like we would post Astros YouTube videos and this podcast. And like the start of the season, when they started kind of slow, you could tell fans were checked out because of the moves that were made in the offseason, losing Tucker and Bregman, but then it clicks and Cam Smith is going and now it's like it's another planet of numbers because fans are all the way back in. Like if you weather the storm and then the organization does what they do, and that's when baseball games and everyone's like, all right, we're back in. So
yeah, that's the best marketing tool. Best marketing tool is winning. It always has been and always will be.
All right, that will do it for this episode of Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. Remember, you can catch the radio version of this on Fridays at 6 o'clock. We'll be rolling all year long here as well. And don't forget as well, or actually, I think I've told you this, but I'll also be doing a Texans podcast brought to you by Blue Star Tequila with a host to be named soon, I believe. This episode's been brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. It's tequila at its best and natural finest. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. We'll be back next week for an all-star break edition of the show. Thank you for watching. Peace.